speaking, I'd like to ask, is anybody here for the first time this evening, attending one of our Hare Krishna festivals? Just a few of you. Okay. It's helpful for me to know. Welcome. And I'm going to speak this evening from a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'll read the verse in Sanskrit translation, and then we'll speak a little bit about it within the context of the spirit of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shuto Nupatito Dhyata Adrito. Is this all? Adrito Vanumodrita Sadhya Punati Saddharmo Deva Vishwajuho Kini. Translation. Pure devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord is spiritually so potent that simply by hearing about such transcendental service, by chanting its glories in response, by meditating on it, by respectfully and faithfully accepting it, or by praising the devotional service of others, even persons who hate the demigods and all other living beings can immediately be purified. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur has commented that the word Saddharma refers to Bhagavad Dharma. This is also confirmed by Siddhaswami. Bhagavad Dharma is spiritually so powerful that even those who by worldly standards are implicated in various ways in sinful behavior can easily be purified by adopting any of the processes mentioned in this verse. In the practice of ordinary piety, one worships God with the expectation of receiving something in return for one's service. Similarly, the impersonalist aspires for his own liberation, wishfully thinking that he will become equal to God. In Bhagavad Dharma, however, there is no such impurity. Bhagavad Dharma is devotional service to the Lord, in which the only objective is the satisfaction of the Lord. If one rejects this process and instead wants to hear about, teach, or meditate upon another process, the chance for immediate purification is lost. Neither ordinary materialistic yoga processes meant for achieving mystic powers, nor impersonal processes based on speculation, have the power to purify immediately those who have fallen into sinful behavior. Saddharma, or Bhagavad Dharma, pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is unique in that even the most fallen souls can immediately rise to the highest perfectional stage by surrendering at the lotus feet of Krishna or his pure devotee. This was vividly demonstrated in the preaching work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in the case of the sinful brothers Jagai and Madha. Omagyana Timanangasya. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Charanagi Vishesha Shanyabadi Vatsavari Sitarani. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadara Shri Vasudeva Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. First, I would like to say that I'm very happy to be in Toronto. I have many fond memories from visiting this temple. I know many of the devotees from years past when they used to visit regularly. Some of you may not remember, but I used to come here, I think, maybe two or three times a year, about 25 years ago, I lost track. And they did it for a number of years. But then somehow Krishna arranged for me in the early 90s to go to the former Soviet Union while it was still in the communist times. And when the communism fell, all of a sudden there was a need for many volunteers to go and to introduce Krishna consciousness to the throngs of people who actually became very, very, very eager to hear the message of Bhagavad Dhamma. And I was requested to stay there and to dedicate all of my energies there. And the result of that was that I had to compromise and couldn't continue to travel in North America as much as I used to. But things have definitely expanded in the former Soviet Union. In where I spent a lot of my time in Ukraine, we have over 25 temples and approximately 15,000 to 20,000 devotees here. And, we have festivals every year, usually attended by anywhere from 6,000 to 10,000 devotees who come for a week-long festival. And that's just Ukraine, there's Russia, and there's which is much bigger than Ukraine. And you could say that I got distracted and couldn't come to Canada as much. But I have fond memories. I have fond memories here, and I'm always very happy to come and to be with all of you. And this verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's spoken by Narada Muni. And he is speaking to Vasudeva. And at that time, Narada was spending substantial time in Dwarka because Krishna was there. And therefore, he would go regularly visit Vasudeva. And at one particular time, Vasudeva asked him specific questions, which, as we said before, we're going to put this verse within the context. If I can get my reader to cooperate, it doesn't seem to be done. Narada Muni had visited Vasudeva, and Vasudeva welcomed him and very much appreciated Narada's presence, saying that he said that your visit is like that of a father to his children, for the benefit of all living beings. And he said that you especially help the most wretched among men, as well as those who are advancing the path towards the Supreme Lord. And then he compares the difference between the benedictions, or the mercy, so-called mercy one gets from demigods, and then this, compared to saintly persons. And he says the activities of demigods lead to both misery and happiness for living beings, but the activities of great saints like you, who've accepted the infallible Lord as their very soul, result only in the happiness of all beings. He differentiates that saintly persons are always merciful and very compassionate to the fallen souls, and their only interest is as to how to induce others to take to the path of devotional service. Whereas distinction, of course, that's being made is that the demigods, they may give certain benedictions, but the benedictions they give are temporary and are not for the ultimate interest of the worshipper. And that's a whole topic in itself. But this is what Narada, this is what Vyasadeva is making the distinction, his appreciation between saintly persons who are situated on the platform of bhakti and who only want to give pure bhakti, and those who are engaged in worship of the demigod for some material return. But Lord Maharaj says that such persons are like persons who are engaged in the mercantile activities, that they give with the expectation of getting something in return. Whereas the characteristic of bhakti, of pure devotional service, is anivalashita shunyam vyanipanam yavatam. There's no expectation of something in return. And that's very pleasing to the Lord. So therefore, this is why the verse that we spoke tonight is going to speak about pure devotional service. And we're going to specifically explain the importance of hearing about pure devotional service. But first, let's continue with the context of the question and the answer. Says that those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering. The demigods are attendants of karma, like a person's shadow. But sadhus are actually merciful to the Father. O Brahman, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is free from all kinds of fear. And then he says that you are always true to your vow. Please instruct me so that by your mercy I may easily free myself from material existence, which is full of many dangers and keeps us constantly bound by fear. So his questions were specifically, please enlighten me so that I can become free from fear. Because this material world is a very dangerous place. Param padam yapi padam padesham shiva Prabhupada used to quote that. That in this material world there's always danger at every step. And of course, the most fearful condition of life is to forget that I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. I'm an eternal living being. And this is a basic cause of fear. And this is what Vasudeva was inquiring. I want to become free from fear. I want to be situated on a platform where I feel completely secure. Because, as Krishna says, on the highest planet, the lowest planet, all of the third places of repeated birth and death, but one who attains samaya bodhi never has to take his birth again. So Vasudeva was asking, please instruct me in such a way that I can become free from fear and actually feel secure in my identity and in my eternality. Feel secure because everything in this world is temporary. And of course, because everything in this world is temporary, anyone who looks for security in this world will be baffled in due course of time. Because in due course of time, the temporary nature of this world will baffle the living being who's looking for security. We can give so many examples, but we won't go into that in so much detail. But I wanted to put this into perspective, because the verse itself is describing the characteristics of pure devotional service, which states that pure devotional service is so transcendentally potent that simply by hearing about it, simply by glorifying it in response, simply by meditating on it, simply by faithfully accepting that it exists, faithfully and respectfully accepting that it's reality, and simply by praising the service of others, that even a person who hates all the demigods, even a person who hates all living beings, can be purified. Now, therefore, Narada Muni is getting right into the essence, the question of Vasudeva. And he begins to narrate the discourse that he had heard previously between the king, Nini, and one of the Pujantas. And, he was self-reliant. And he was quoting, he was citing that conversation where a similar question was asked by King Nini. He also wanted to know about how can I be secure, and can you please describe to me the characteristics of good emotional service, and how can I become free from fear? And in that conversation, it is described that fear arises due to misidentification of the body, accepting it to be the self. That's how fear arises. And that because we misidentify with the material body, then we have to identify with everything that which is temporary, including the body. And therefore, and Srila Prabhupada also in one place explains that fear comes by uncertainty about the future. And in the next verse, he explains to King India very, very nice, he gives a very nice analogy, and I like to use this verse because it's very, very relevant. It's something that we can all relate to because it talks about dreams. And usually everybody knows what a dream is. So he says that although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul considers it to be real under the influence of his conditioned intelligence. I'm quoting the verse, actually, verbatim. Somehow I have the memory for this verse, but I'll explain it. So if you don't catch the whole thing, I'll come back. So this is, he says, although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul experiences it real, is real within his conditioned intelligence. This imaginary experience of the world would be separate from Krishna. Can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desire. When a conditioned soul dreams of something very wonderful, or he dreams of something very horrible, he creates a reality that has no existence beyond his imagination. Then he says the tendency of the mind is to accept and reject things on the basis of sense gratification. Therefore, the intelligent person must control the mind, restricting it from the tendency of seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is so controlled, one will become free from fear. That's the verse. That was two verses. But now, let's analyze it, because he's speaking about, essentially, he's speaking about the benefit of Anyabalasha Tashunya Jnana Kamani Navasam, to engage in devotional service, free from material desires, free from the knowledge which arises from a mystic philosophy, and free from fruitive activities. Such first-class devotional service is rendered, a devotee who renders devotional service to Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. That is pure devotional service. It's favorably as Krishna desires, and it's free from all other agendas. One is not trying to satisfy himself, one is trying to satisfy the Supreme Lord. And such pure devotional service is very powerful. It actually attracts the attention of the Lord. But he says that one of the mind's tendency in the mind is to accept and reject things on the basis of sense gratification. And he says that this fearful condition of life is due to seeing things separate from Krishna. So he uses the analogy of dreaming. Now, I'm sure many of you have the experience of dreaming. There are two kinds of dreaming. Good dreaming
I'm sure I may have to catch it. But he uses this analogy to explain that when a person has a good dream, just like you have a dream, a very good dream, just like you may be dreaming of somebody that you've always wanted to be with, to be close with, you're embracing it, you're feeling so good in that embrace, and you wake up and say, oh, it's not you, it's only my pillow. So you feel really good in the dream, but when you wake up, you feel very sad. You're not very happy because you're thinking, what am I dreaming? So you feel sad. So you compare that to the bad dream. You have a very terrible dream. You're eaten by a tiger. I often, when I tell this, use this verse, I always say to myself that because I fly a lot, sometimes I fall asleep in the plane and I dream that the plane is falling very fast. I don't know why. Maybe not. But it happens from time to time. But when I wake up, I say, oh. You feel good. The plane's not falling fast. It's just going along, steady pace, passengers look fine. Nobody's in anxiety, and you feel good. So when you feel good, you're waking up from a bad dream. And when you feel bad from waking up from a good dream, then the Sage is saying that both your happiness and distress has no connection with reality. It's only connected to a dream. But no reality there. It's just connected to a dream. So that's the night dream. Then he says, it's the daydream. Use both. When the conditioned soul dreams of something wonderful, or he dreams of something very horrible, or he daydreams of something he would like to have, or something he would like to avoid. We have daydreams too. Like daydreams, the daydreams, night dreams, they last for a little while, sometimes like very brief. The daydreams can last quite a long time. And we may live off a daydream for, you know, and they keep us going, that daydream, but yeah, I know, I only have it. And it keeps us motivated. You know, we feel like, you know, like the horse is drawn by the carrot in front of the nose. That daydream, like, someday it will come and that will become my reality. My happiness. So we daydream of something we'd like to have, we get it, and when then all of a sudden we find out that, jeez, I didn't know these extra things come along with it. If I would have known that, I think I maybe would have taken second thought about my daydream. Right? My daydream wasn't the blissful reality that I thought it would provide me upon achieving my goals. So we daydream of something we'd like to have, or something we'd like to avoid. This is also a good verse on the side of good and bad. We dream of something we want and think, oh, we want to avoid disease. We dream of avoiding old age. Of course, it doesn't work. I found that out very quickly. It seemed very quickly. I can't figure it out. Do it all went. I mean, last time I was here was 25 years ago, and now I'm 25 years old. I mean, I was coming here regularly 25 years ago. Now 25 years old. Old age comes very quickly. And Srila Prabhupada even told us when we were very young, he said, don't think this won't happen to you. So we dream of things we'd like to avoid, but the daydream of things we like to have or like to avoid also has no connection with reality. It's just a daydream. There's a night dream that we feel happy and then we feel distressed when we get it. I was so much wanted it, but now I'm thinking the first thing that comes to my mind is the story of Chitakitri Maharaj and the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was dreaming. He wanted to have a son. got his benediction, he got a son whose name would be Hashishoka, which would be the cause of happiness and lamentation. So his wife gave birth to a son, and many of his co-wives,
queens, they became very envious because all the attention was going to the queen and poor son, and they decided to force their son. And what was the cause of great joy for King Jujutsu? It was the cause of great distress. Of course, Narada Muni arranged for the living entity to come back in the body of the son and to speak to King Jujutsu, to enlighten him, to enlighten all everyone who is present about the eternality of the soul and about devotional service. Because when one becomes enlightened about the eternality of the soul and pure devotional service, the fearful condition of life goes away. So, the verse then describes that the duality of the material world is like this. It has no connection with reality. It's only connected to the deep. What is the reality? He says the tendency of the mind is to accept and reject things on the basis of sense gratification. An intelligent person, therefore, must control the mind by resisting it from the tendency of seeing things separate from Krishna. This is the tendency of the mind. We see things separate from Krishna, just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described by Krishna to Lord Brahma. He says, "Oh Brahma, whatever you see that has no reality," he says, "whatever you see that is separate from me, you should know it as my material energy, which is like a reflection which appears in the darkness." He says, "If you see something separate from me, it's my illusory energy. And therefore, even the ability to see something separate from Krishna is coming from Krishna. It's my illusory energy." Mama Maya Dorachiya, Krishna says. It's my illusory energy. So even the ability to see something separate from me is coming from me. But if you see that everything is coming from me, then you see the value. If you see, he says, if you see of anything value, but it has no connection with me, it's my illusory energy. So why do we think something is valuable if we can't see its connection to Krishna? It's because we think, oh, it's valuable. He says, as soon as you see it as something valuable, but you don't see how it's connected to Krishna, it's my illusory energy. Therefore, the reality of this world is, and the transcendental reality, is that everything is connected to Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that all this material energy is connected to me. Aham Savasya Bhavavo Mataksava Bhavajate Yitin Matavajate Ram Buddha Bhava Samatha. I am the source of the material. How long am I supposed to speak? Huh? 7:30. I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and they worship me with all their hearts. Of all that is material, all that is spiritual, you should know for certain, I know its origin and its dissolution. Everything is connected to Krishna. But how to see it that way? When one learns how to see it that way, then one becomes freed from fear. This is, Prabhupada tells them, the analogy in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he gives the analogy of the cat who carries in her mouth the kitten. And when the cat carries the kitten in the mouth, the kitten is thinking, oh, this is a beautiful scene. I've seen it before. When I was a little child, I remember I tell the story also. When I was a little child, we had a cat, and the cat had some kittens, and a litter of kittens out on the back porch. And I just saw the kittens one morning, and I went out and I wanted to see the kittens. And my sister warned me, don't do that. Mother's very protective when the kittens are just born. And so I went out, picked up the kittens, and I went back inside. A little bit later, I saw the mother cat picking up each kitten from behind with her teeth.
and carrying the kittens up into the rafters to get the kittens away from me. And you know, when you look at the kittens, you think, my God, like these kittens are, I remember, what's happening? And I thought the mother was eating her kittens. But the kittens were completely pacified. The kittens were thinking, my mother's taking me home, taking me, giving me shelter. So Prabhupada gives the analogy, when the cat picks up the kitten is thinking, this is my mother taking me home. He says, but when the cat opens her mouth and shows her teeth to the mouse, different perspective. The mouse doesn't think, oh, this is my mother coming to take me home. And that cat used to be mice home too. But anyways, that's another part of the story. He says, it's just like a person who's in Krishna consciousness. At the time of death, he's thinking, oh, Krishna's coming to take me home. But if one forgets Krishna, Krishna says, Antakali Chamameva, Smara Mokokalevara, whoever remembers me at the time of giving up his body, he wants to taste my nature. This is no doubt. So many places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna places the emphasis, Manmana Bhagavatam Yajamanamas Kuru. Think of me, worship me, offer your homages unto me, surely you will come to me. Emphasis is there that actually bhakti means remembering Krishna, seeing Krishna. And this verse that we quoted tonight describes the characteristics of pure devotional service are those who always remember the Lord. Pure devotional service is so transcendentally powerful that simply by hearing about it, simply by glorifying it in response, simply by meditating, because sometimes people would think, we tend to think that this pure devotional service is something that's only held by a unique clique. I read about that in Srimad Bhagavatam, but what's that got to do with me? You know? It's like this Prahlad Maharaj, he was a pure devotee, he always remembered the Lord, and Lord Shivadev, he came, he appeared before him, he protected Prahlad Maharaj. But Prahlad Maharaj is a pure devotee, he's in Srimad Bhagavatam. Dhruva Maharaj, there's a story of Dhruva Maharaj, he had some desire, he came looking for a piece of broken glass, but he followed the instructions of Narada Muni, and by following the instructions of Narada Muni, he went out to the forest, he meditated on a mantra that was given to him by Narada Muni, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, he performed austerities, he saw the Lord, and he became purified. Bali Maharaj, he was born in the family of demons. He became purified. Great pure devotees. Pariksit Maharaj, pure devotee. We hear the story. Taraskrita Vipalabdha Kshatakshita Hidahi Tashita Patikurvanti Tatpata Kamayogi. That in describing the characteristics of Pariksit Maharaj is that Shamik Rishi stated, he said that devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they're cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, insulted, or even killed, they never inclined to avenge themselves. That's the characteristics of a pure devotee. Imagine, insulted. Somebody says something to us the wrong way, or we don't even, oh boy. Say that one more time. Insulted, neglected. Cursed! Pariksit Maharaj was cursed! Sringi, the son of Shamik Rishi, cursed them. And Shamik Rishi quoted this verse because he was thinking when he found out that Sringi cursed Pariksit Maharaj for some small incidental matter. When he found that out, he became so disturbed, he says, Pariksit Maharaj should come to curse him. It's the only way my son will be properly punished for what he's done with this great pure king. And then he thought, wait a minute, Pariksit Maharaj is a pure devotee. He'll never come to curse. Because this is the nature of a devotee. The devotee's Lord is so forbearing that, even the cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, insulted, even killed, they don't seek revenge. Why? Because he's Krishna. They see Krishna's hand in everything. And because they see Krishna, they don't feel animosity, they don't feel envy towards other living beings. They don't feel fear. Because they're in Krishna consciousness. And therefore this verse states that even though we may not be in pure devotional service, the verse explains that if we want to become pure, if it's an aspiration we might aspire for, something very beneficial that we might like to have, then there's some benefit in hearing about it. Because simply by hearing about it, simply by glorifying in response, simply by meditating on it, simply by faithfully, respectfully accepting that this pure devotional service exists, and the more I hear about it, the more I become convinced it exists. And simply by praising the service of others, you become purified. Even though I may not be pure, but I become pure by hearing about such transcendental power. Even by praising the service of others, it's like. And the other day I was telling a story. So I was telling a story about my god brother, Shri Maharaj. And he was very dear to me. And one devotee was asking a question. He said, how is it that by having examples, it can give us, it can help us? Something, question was something to that nature. And I was telling the story of Ashwini Maharaj. Ashwini Maharaj, he found out he had cancer, liver cancer, and he was no longer qualified for a transplant, and he decided he wanted to go to Mayapur and to be with his godbrothers. And he wanted to be there for the installation of the Panchatattva. And previously, he and I would get together sometimes. He would ask me, he'd like my kirtans, and he would come, you come and have kirtan with me. And even when I was in Mumbai, I would just went and visited him once in Mumbai. I just pulled out on the boat and we sat for the night and had kirtan together. And then when I visited Mumbai again, he was there at Bhaktivedanta Hospital. He asked me if I could come. But unfortunately, on that trip, I said, I can't come. I said, but don't worry, next time we get together, we'll come and we'll have kirtan together. So when he came to Mayapur, I came up to Shri Maharaj and I embraced him. I said, Maharaj, I'm ready for you 24/7, as much as you want, let's have kirtan. So he used to have kirtan when he was getting to the stage where, because he came to Mayapur to leave his body. So he, devotees were coming into his room and he was having kirtan every night. He was just happy to be in the association of devotees, hearing kirtan. And I used to go every night after the GBC meetings, and I'd take part in the kirtans. I wasn't always leading them. One night, I after the meetings, I had a really bad headache. Really bad headache. And I was thinking, I don't think I can go to the kirtan tonight. And I wrote a little note and I gave it to, sent it one devotee and told him to give it to Shri Maharaj's servant, secretary, that was my important. And in the note about Shri Maharaj, please forgive me, I have a terrible headache tonight. I don't think I could come possibly to the kirtan, but I'll be there tomorrow. And I was walking back to my residence. And I was thinking, as I was walking back to the residence, I think, my godbrother's not lying in bed. And he's so sick. And all he wants to do is hear kirtan. And this is, I have a headache. What am I doing? Why am I there? I have just a little headache. You know, and he's getting ready to leave his body. So I decided, I'm going to go back. So I went back to the room. And when I went to the room, all the devotees were sitting in the kirtan, and the room was quite full. And Shri Maharaj looked up and saw me standing by the door. And he looked at me and said, come here. And I said, Maharaj, I can't listen to too many devotees.
And the body is just like parted, like the waves, you know, that we come. And he patted on the bed, said, sit here. Shitamara got up and lying down on the bed. He turned to Mayapur and said, give me the tiger bomb. He took the tiger bomb, made me sit there, and he took it and started rubbing it on my forehead. And for 20, 30 minutes, he was just massaging my head. And it's just, I praise this devotee. Because simply by praising the service of others, we become purified. We should be able to recognize and see others, their qualities, their devotional qualities, and become purified. Because that's one of the five processes. Hearing about devotional service, glorifying in response, meditating on it, faithfully and respectfully accepting that it exists, and praising the service of others. We become purified. This is the power of pure devotional service. And this is the benefit it gives anyone, no matter what condition of life one is in. Anyone can benefit by coming in contact with the transcendental sound vibration, glorifying pure devotional service. That's the message of this verse. That's a little bit about what Narada Muni told Vasudeva. He said a lot more. But the more we hear about the topics of pure devotional service, which are the transcendental reality, then we become free from the dualities of this material world. And actually, when we become free from the dualities of this material world, we can actually begin to see things in connection to Krishna and become peaceful, become fearless, that actually, I'm Krishna's eternal servant. And my purpose in life is to understand what is my relationship with him and how can I serve him. This is the essence of the verse and I am finished.
So we want to thank Niranjan Swami for a wonderful class, another round of applause for tonight. And we hope to see him here soon again. Thank you so much, Maharaj. Prasada will now be served here as well as in the moment. Thank you.